June the 12th, 2018, I'm at Landmark recording the talk tonight of the Jones Boys. And when I say the Jones Boys, that's Paul and Mark Jones and their sister Joanna, who are talking about Jack Jones, their father, who started off Hastings Motors, which was Monick Motors, then Hastings Motors.
I must confess, I've got a friend who grew up in Caroline Road, which was their stamping ground, and all through her childhood, she honestly did believe that, I think it might have been George Jones's song, had written in the 1950s, which was, "The whole world's talking about the Jones boys." She was so innocent, she thought that was about Paul and Mark. Because they were world famous in Caroline Road, and I think their sisters were too. But it's our great pleasure tonight. Let's get straight into it. I'd like to introduce Mark, standing. We've got now Paul, stand up. Paul, introduce yourself. We have elder sister Jackie. She's nervous, and sadly Joanna's away at the moment and couldn't be here. But between the three of them, they're presenting the Jones family tonight and their wonderful father, Jack. So over to you, Mark. Thank you.
Welcome everyone. Just tell me down the back if you can't hear me and I'll try and adjust this thing. Thank you for coming out on such a horrible night. We just hope that you enjoy the journey with Jack Jones as much as we've enjoyed putting it together. It's been a bit of fun really. So, Dad was born in Dartford, Kent in 1902. His father, our grandfather, was a draftsman for an architectural firm, and at the age of six they moved from Dartford to Strode Road, Wilsdon Green, London. And at the age of six, Dad started school, and Jackie, I think you're going to tell a little story about his lost money.
I always knew my father as just Dad, and my mother always called him John, never Jack. My disrespectful brothers called him the old man. Dad grew up in London with his family. There were six boys and one girl, Gracie. They were fairly poor, really, and therefore very frugal. My father was born with one lazy eye, and at a very young age, he had to wear glasses. When he was six, he traded his glasses in for a frog. And his poor mother had to trek halfway across London to retrieve them. He recalled being sent to buy fish and chips once. One evening for the family's tea, he was given half a crown. However, he was distracted and the half crown went rolling down the grating, never to be seen again. On his return, his mother burst into tears. My dad had a beautiful singing voice. He was choir boy in his local Church of England in Wilsdon Green, and he also sang in St. Paul's Cathedral. And he passed that love of music on to all of us. One thing I've forgotten to tell you, every Saturday night, the big tin bath was brought into the kitchen, this was when he was young, filled with hot water and the family bath, all ready for church on Sunday. We used to have some great sing songs around the piano because we've all sort of inherited that love of music from him.
Thank you, Jackie. In 1920, at the age of 18, Dad decided to follow his brother in the Merchant Navy. He sailed the world. 2 years later, he was back in England and decided to go again, and this time never to return. In fact, he had a younger brother who he never met. So, on his first trip, he had a good look at Adelaide and thought this might be the place to jump off. But for some reason, and reasons why we're here, he decided to carry on to Auckland, and he did jump ship. So we are aliens, overstayers. He joined a firm by the name of Rio Motors, so this is where the motor business really starts. In 1925, he became a mechanic for Rio Motors in Auckland. Besides doing that, he did a bit of bookkeeping, and he used to read a page of the dictionary every day, and this happened to help later in life to get him to where he got to. In this time that he was with Rio Motors, they had a publicity stunt, and they had the driver and Dad the mechanic drove from North Cape to the Bluff. This is in 1925.
They travelled down to Invercargill and then came back up through Hawke's Bay. There's a mob of sheep coming through Hawke's Bay. Now, there's a little story attached to this just after they got through the mob of sheep. This is all recorded in a booklet that Rio Motors did. There was a smell of smoke, and the driver thought that the engine was on fire. But they discovered that the old man who smoked a pipe had put his pipe in his top pocket and it was still alight, and that's where the smoke came from. After his stint with Auckland with Rio Motors, they transferred him to Hamilton, and he met this lovely lady who happened to be our mother. So there was a little bit of a romance there, and then he was sent down to Palmerston North as the manager of Rio Motors in Palmerston. Now, Mum jumped out the window, according to my older sister, with a bit of help from our grandmother and her two sisters, packed a bag and said, "Quick, get after that guy. I think he's the one for you." So she did. And Jackie and Paul were both born in Palmerston North. In the meantime, Dad was coming up to Napier, and he was doing business with the then mayor of Napier, a fellow by the name of Hercock. And Hercock ran the Napier-Wellington Transport Company. Dad was selling him trucks. In 1938, the local Ford dealer, Peach Motors, some of you may or may not remember, had a bit of a row with Ford, and Ford said, "Well, you're out, we'll get someone else to come in." So Mayor Hercock's son-in-law, Hannon, offered Dad a third shareholding in what was to become Monarch Motors. So Dad moved up to Havelock. They lived at Leafmore, just beside the strawberry patch, and then moved into Caroline Road, where they lived for the rest of their lives. In 1940, Monarch Motors was opened. It was the site of an old movie theatre that had been demolished in the 31 earthquake. It was wartime, it was tough going, shortage of money, shortage of cars, and Dad wasn't eligible for overseas service because of an eye problem. So he got together with a fellow by the name of Jack Baxter, who was a manager of the local state picture theatre. And they did a thing called the Fun Sessions, which happened at the Municipal Theatre, and they had full houses. They were just part of an act of a variety performance. Some years later, I think I was about 12 or 13, Greater Hastings, over a Blossom Festival week, invited the two Jacks back to do two acts, one in the first and one in the second half. And we were privileged to listen to their practice and then saw the show. And it was hilarious. Dad was always the serious guy. Jack Baxter was the fall guy. And there was just two little punchlines. The one in the first half, Dad was trying to help Jack Baxter. He'd fallen in love with Nausea Bagwash. So he was trying to see how he was going to propose to Nausea. And Dad said, "Look, you've got to do something like this on one knee and say, 'Nausea, you have lips like petals.'" And she'll say, "Rose petals." And Jack Baxter said, "No, bicycle petals." So that was that punchline. And then Jack Baxter was a patient. Dad was the doctor. Jack Baxter walked in. He said, "I've got the shingles." So Dad said, "Take your shirt off." And on Jack Baxter's tummy, lipstick, was a funny face. And down in the orchestra pit, there's a bloke on the drums, and Jack Baxter used to roll his stomach. The spotlight was right on him. And Dad examined him and said, "No, you're all right. Where do you think you've got the shingles?" He said, "I've got them in the truck out in the yard." He said, "To do your new driveway." So that was their thing. So that's what they did. Now, this is younger Joanna's christening. So that's elder Jackie and brother Paul. Now, you can see that look on my face. I happen to be holding Paul's toy pistol. And he was a bit pissed off because he wanted it back and I wasn't going to give it to him. But I think after the photo was taken, you can see the look on Paul's face. I didn't have the pistol for very long. Actually, I was a bit stink to Paul in those days, and he sort of had to sort of get on top of me at times, and he did once. He said, "Look," he said, "you're not actually part of this family." He said, "You were left on the doorstep in a sack." And he said, "Mrs. Hoepoe, she had you," and Mrs. Hoepoe had 12 children, and I did need counselling for a year or two after that. Anyway, we got over it. So, Dad loved golf. His whole life was around golf. And there's a competition that Jim Newbegin would know, the Jones Four Ball, which I think the Newbegin foursome still going, but the Jones Four Ball is one of the longest competitions still running out of Bridge Player. So that's the Golf Club Committee in 1960. That's Dad on the end, Doug Grieve, Roe Cashmore, Dr. Cashmore, Les Fisher, an accountant, Eric Anderson, and there's a tall fellow at the back, Tubby Campbell, and Frank Coles. Good on you, Richard. And I think there's two more, Richard. Do you know who they are? Doug McIver, that's right, and Jack Nicol, I think. Right, that'll do. Yeah, and they're all smoking. Look at them. Yeah. Okay, so there's three generations. That's Paul and son Tim and Tim's two boys. Now, in 1953, there were three great things that happened in the world. There was the Queen's coronation, Sir Edmund Hillary climbed Everest, and Jack Jones gave that seat to the Hastings Golf Club. So that's why they're sitting on it. And there is a plaque, J.W. Jones, 1953, and that's still there today on the 5th tee. So, Blossom Parades, Monarch Motors were always there. Sister Joanna remembers making thousands of crepe paper flowers for that. Okay, now this is sort of the first big development that happened at the end of Queen and Hastings Street. Our showroom was on Heratonga Street opposite Hutchinson's. So Dad and his foresight, when anything ever came for sale in and around, the dealership came from Heratonga Street to there. There used to be an old walnut tree. I remember as a kid picking up walnuts. That's the Regent Picture Theatre, or the West End that was there. So he bought houses. There were, I think, about seven, and he jumped the road as well. And then there was an old barn of a place. It was a second-hand bottle store. There might have been something else before then. But that development, we built this workshop out to here, cleared all that there, and then we jumped the road for the first time and had a used car operation on the corner. And next door to that was a tractor and truck workshop. And then Caltex moved in, and you might remember driving in there and buying some petrol. And that was the frontage. That's waving at Hutchie across the... I don't think Hutchie was there in those days. We didn't need him there anyway, but we got him later.
You're a lucky man.
Okay, so that's the show, 1956. You can see a Mark 1 Zephyr there. So that's when, you know, you remember you had to have overseas funds to buy a new car. Oh, they were good days, weren't they? Now, this picture, Joanna would have introduced this tonight. Unfortunately, she can't be here. This is in front of our beach house at Hamuana. And really, she wanted you to reflect on the sand. Now, Paul and I used to play cricket on that beach. This is down in front of our beach. It's halfway between Hamuana and Tiawana. We'll show you another picture in a minute, it'll blow you away. But the old man, he loved fishing, and he would go further down the beach towards Clifton. He wouldn't quite go into Clifton because old Wes Stanley, who owned Clifton Camping Ground, he charged a shilling to go in there. So Dad and his mates would stop just at the entrance of the camping ground, and they called it Poor Man's Point. So now that's why we're glad that Joanna's not sitting on the beach at the moment. That's taken just last year. That's our old beach house. And I'm not sure if it's there this afternoon after the storm last night, but it's disappearing. Right, 1967. Well, at this time, Dad took a step back and Hastings Motors was born. That'll do. We purchased the shareholding of the Napier people, Hercock and Hannon, and we became Hastings Motors. Paul was appointed as the Ford dealer. He was the youngest Ford dealer, and I think probably has still been the youngest Ford dealer ever appointed. He was 29 years of age. I'll just tell you a little story. Our first show, because we had a show, Paul and I were at the show. We'd only been in business since February, and we had a couple of drinks, as you do, in the boot of the car with the clients and so on, and we ended up at the Pie Cart, which was opposite the police station. It was getting a bit late, and Dad had mortgaged Caroline Road to help the boys get into the business. And I said to Paul, that mortgage on Caroline Road, I'd like to get rid of that in a couple of years. And Paul looked at me in the eye and he said, we'll do it in one. And we did. So we moved on from there. Dad, in his foresight, he's got a potential two boys could come into the business. So Paul went overseas in 58 to 60 and attended, there was a Ford dealer's course with Ford. I followed in 64-5. And it sort of gave us a grounding into the motor business. So away we went from there. We continued to by land. We'd already been across the road and we were still doing stuff. We had a staff of nearly 60 at one stage, very loyal. Most of them stayed with us for their working lives. Two that we're very proud of, two salesmen we employed. One's now the dealer principal of Bay Ford in Hastings, and John Clark is the dealer principal in Dannyburg. And several of our staff met and married. So, yeah, it was a happy family, really. It was good. And one of the other things that we did, which a lot of local businesses did in those days, we supported and looked after special needs people, one of whom worked with us for 25 years. Yeah, Dave Whittaker.
Yep. He wasn't special needs.
He wasn't special needs. No, he wasn't special needs. He was a very special person. Yeah. So this was all the advertising that we did. Newspaper, some of you might remember. Actually, you're very lucky if when we advertised once a week with these photos, when our mother was alive, she bought all the papers, so you might not have actually got a paper on the night, but she loved the little boys. Yeah. So working with Paul, we did a lot of advertising in the paper. We also did a lot of radio advertising. And some of you might remember a DJ called David Marnie. And Marnie and Paul became very close friends. And Dave Marnie would play our ad, and then he would chip in and voice over it and say, listen, you must get down to Hastings Motors and see the tall dwarf. Has he got a deal for you? You've got to see Paul Jones, the tall dwarf. So I was in the showroom one day, and this fella came in, and I said, how can I help you? And he said, look, I'm terribly embarrassed. I haven't come to buy a car, but he said, my wife heard your ad this morning. She said, you've got to get in there and tell me, how big is this guy? I want to know how tall he is. And he said, would it be all right? And I said, look, just a minute. So I looked into Paul's office, quickly told Paul what the story is. Paul said, give me a minute. So I went out, he said, just on the phone, hang on, it won't be long. A minute later, I said, come on in. In the meantime, Paul had tipped his chair behind his desk and was kneeling on the floor. So when the guy walked in, all he could see was Paul's shoulders and his head. And the bloke walked in and Paul said, good morning. And the bloke looked down and he shook hands and he looked at me and said, geez, he's small, isn't he? I'm going to get home and tell her. And with that, he walked out.
Now, have you got something to say?
That's not all true, by the way. And I can't let that pass. In 1988, we opened our new dealership building. Mark's office was at the end of the showroom, and two new phones were purchased, a black one and a white one. A chap entered the new showroom, and Mark was keen to make a good impression. So he picked up the phone before he beckoned the chap into his office and made sure that those cars were delivered by Friday, otherwise things could be not so good for us. Let them go. And Mark turned to the fellow and he said, how can I help you? The chap said, I don't really know. I've come to connect your phone.
Okay. Well, sadly, on this high note, Dad's journey finally ended. In February 1973, he passed away in Royston Hospital. But before that, when he was fit and well and getting into older age, he always said to Paul and I, you know, when I go, I want to be on the first tee at Bridge Park, and I want to knock one down the middle, and I want to go just like that. So the night he died, I happened to be sitting with him, his eyes were closed, and he said, are you there, son? I said, I am, Dad. And he said, you know where I am? I said, where are you, Dad? He said, I'm on the first tee, and I've just hit one down the middle. So I knew it was time to say goodbye. So that was the end of Dad's journey. During this time, the vehicle market was booming. We were selling over 100 vehicles alone to J. Waddy Canneries. You remember when everything was going around Hawke's Bay? And it was all good. In fact, just a quick story. We said to Waddy's, we got their business away from Stuart Greer's. And old Ed Greer wasn't very happy about that because he and Jim Waddy were quite good mates. Anyway, we managed to get it. And we said to Waddy's, look, we'll deliver anywhere in New Zealand, free of charge, at a moment's notice. Well, we got a tester. Monday morning, they rang and said, we've written a vehicle off from Christchurch and we want it replaced by 4 o'clock tomorrow afternoon. It was an escort van. We were scratching our heads. How do we get across Cook Strait? So Ivan Hopping, our sales manager at the time, said, look, there's an outfit in Wellington called Safe Air. They fly Bristol freighters. Why don't we get hold of them and see what they can do for us? Well, we rang them. They said, if you can get down here at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning, we'll get you to Blenheim, and you'll be off on your way to Christchurch. You'll be there by 4 o'clock. Right. So up I get, Sparrows in the morning, and I'm not too good at that. And down to Wellington, jumped on this Bristol freighter and across to Blenheim, and we delivered the vehicle at 4 o'clock, and I flew back the next day, and Watty's never tested us again. At that time, Ford Motor Company, as you're probably aware, there was an assembly industry going on, CKD cars and all that stuff, and then, of course, that all went, and then built up cars coming in to the country, and things started to change. You know, the Japanese cars and all that happened. But there was a fortuitous phone call, and I'm glad he's here tonight. Craig Morgan rang Paul one day, Morgan Builders, Craig, and said, Paul, would you be interested in selling half your dealership? And Paul said, quick as a flash, no, but I would be interested in selling it all, from Queen Street to Heratoma Street. And Craig said, I'll get back to you. Well, just a week or two later, Craig rang and said, now listen, this is really, you can't say a word about this, but there's a developer from Palmerston North, I think his name is Graham Lindsay, from Access Developments, and they wanted our land. So we had to do a bit of a, here it is here. That's the finished article, but to get there was quite a thing. We had to negotiate with Chas Bone, the plumber, who was next door to us. We couldn't tell him what was going on, but we made him an offer he couldn't refuse, so we took his building. We then dealt with Ginty Walsh Partners. I don't know if you remember, they had a very nice little single-story building across the road from us. A little story there to get that. We'd gone unconditional on that without thinking properly, and for $300,000, this is 1987. Fortunately, we bought a block of land down on the other side of the expressway, between the expressway and Oak Avenue, 2.5 acres, which we were going to put a tractor and truck workshop on. Thank goodness we didn't. And there was a bloke by the name of David Dine, David Dozy Dine. Jim played cricket for Marist, and he was the Caltex rep. And I took David down, I said, look, we want to sell this, would you be interested? And he knew the expressway, he said, I'll ring Wellington. 2 days later, two suits arrived from Wellington, and they said, what's the story? We showed them, they said, how much do you want for it? We said, 300,000, when do you want it? We said, by the end of the week, and it was all done. And then we dealt with dear old Nessie King. Do you remember some of you, Nessie, Frank Christ's mother-in-law, dear lady? And so she came into the equation, we bought her house, and she moved into a flat. And then the tractor workshop that we had, we sold that to Clearview, Tim Turvey. And I don't think Tim ever paid for it, but whenever when Paul and I go out there for a meal, we get a free bottle of wine, so we don't do too badly. And then I think our used car office, at one stage it went to Okawa Cricket Club, they used it as a pavilion, and then I think it ended up on Moffat Orchard. Is that still there, Johnny?
Yes.
There you go. He hasn't paid for that either. So Paul and I carried on with Rotary and did our community thing. I was president of Karamu Rotary back in 1980-81. And then Paul was the chairman of the Ford New Zealand Dealer Council. That was quite a prestigious appointment, and he did a fantastic job, 2 years. And he happened to be in Sydney with the Ford New Zealand team and met Henry Ford II and his son Edsel. Now, Ford Motor Company were going through a bit of a tough time, and Brother Paul had 2 shares in Ford Motor Company World, and he'd received a dividend check for $5.63. So when he was on the podium, he called up Henry Ford and said, look, I know you're going through tough times. I'm not going to cash this dividend check. I'd like you to have it back. And I bought the house down. Yeah. So we sold the business back in 1998. We retained the land and buildings. We did business with the current dealer, Bay Ford, and then Bay relocated down to Stalford Lodge, and we then sold the land and buildings, and it's now the business hub that you see on the corner of Hastings Street and Queen Street. So, all I'd like to finish up with is to say to my brother, you're a great guy to work for. Oh, I'm taking up here. And I know it was a journey we both enjoyed and survived, and with the help of our wives and families. I'm not saying we didn't have our differences of opinions at the time, but we got over them very quickly. I hope you enjoyed the journey with Jack Jones. I'd firstly like to say thank you to Jackie and Joanna, who isn't here, but specifically to Tim Jones for his help. Thank you.
Any questions?
I've got a little comment. Our old man bought a 67 Mark IV. You probably don't want to hear about Mark IVs, do you, anymore?
You haven't paid for that,
I think we paid for it one or two times over. They had a history of rattling a bit, didn't they? And I took it in, and Jim Ellis got somebody to look at it. I went back and picked it up, brought it home, and it was still rattling as bad as ever. And I rang Jim up and he said, you can't have everything.
Any more questions? David Keyes, old mate.
I'll keep this as brief as I can because I've been friends of the Jones family for 76 years. It is actually a great privilege.
First of all, I'm just going to address this to Mark. Very, very well done, Mark. It's a serious character building exercise with the Jones family, and I would like one question of you, Matt. Have you ever been tied to a tree in the forest and left there?
Well, the answer is yes, Kiesel.
Right. Right, well, can you answer then how long you were left tied to the tree?
How long is this question going to go on for?
Because it was quite a long time. And I didn't really enjoy it, but I know it was another one of those days when I peed him off and I kept following around everywhere. And Mum had gone to the supermarket to get some groceries, and when she came home, I was tied up to a tree.
So he was rescued by his mother. Now, unusual indeed. Well, and of course, Paul and I played a lot of sport together, cricket, etc., etc., on their front lawn, which Jack was meticulous about. It was a putting green, and every blade of grass was polished. And there was one occasion when we were studying chemistry at the time, and we had an Andrew's little salts tin, in which there was some sulfur, some potassium nitrate, and charcoal. And we lit this and put the lid on to see if the lid blew off, just gunpowder. Well, it didn't, but there was quite a conflagration, put it that way, and left a very black mark in Jack's putting green, which I have to say he wasn't very happy about. We played lots of cricket and all this on his lawn, and I was batting at this particular time, and I hit the ball to the outfield, and I ran for the run, and I was going to easily get there because somebody else in the field hadn't quite got to the ball, but all of a sudden Paul had a ball out and took the bales off. He had a ball in his pocket and he said, you're run out. And could I argue against him? Well, the family know this story, of course, in that we had pistols. Paul was the first in this forest to have a metal pistol that went bang, and all the rest of us had wooden ones, you know. But when you were shot, you had to die and count to 20, and then you became alive. Well, phew, Jones, you're shot. He said, oh, no, I'm not counting to 20, you missed. Really, it was a character building exercise for everybody. I'm quite sure to see the antics that went on within the family. They were a great family, and the girls, of course, were just gorgeous. And it's been an absolute privilege for us, our families and their friends, to be associated with the Jones family.
Well done, David.
Now, I'd just like to say, you belong to Joneses and bought several cars, and of course, it put a smile on the dial. You know, selling is an exchange of trust, and that's what I'd say they were the epitome of. We enjoyed, over many years, trucks and cars and vans and bits and pieces. Thanks very much.
I think their sociability, their social consciences, they've all done a lot in the community. They really have, more than many of you will realise. They knew how to marry the right people. They've been great. And I've got one tiny little story. David and I have been very lucky to have them for friends since we hit Hastings. And we came back here. We knew a few in our fraternity, but we didn't know many outsiders that way. And we were asked along to a very nice dinner. There was a lovely group of people there, and for us it was very nice to have a whole lot of people that weren't connected with our speciality too, so it was nice meeting outsiders. Anyway, We came back from Britain absolutely skint. We had nothing except we did keep hold of our old Cortina. And we'd worn it out on London roads, and of course they put salt on the roads in winter there, so everything gets rotted in your cars in Britain in those days. We bought this thing home. We had to get the whole motor reconditioned because we couldn't afford a new one. We're driving along and the absolute whole radiator fell on the road. So we went to this little dinner, but we didn't know that someone from Ford Motors was at the dinner. And boy, did they feed that story from us. And of course, sitting right next to us was Paul. But anyway, guys, haven't they been great? And they have been a great family for the community, and I think we're privileged to know them and to know that there's several locals coming on as well. So thank you, everyone, for coming.